you may have seen, is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Now offering video visits so you can take control of your orthopedic care from the comfort of your home. Schedule online at orthocarolina.com. Ortho Carolina, you improved.
All right. I am back with another episode of You May Have Seen, Conversations for Change. Yeah, I've just recently tacked that onto the title of the show for right now. I know there have been a few iterations of You May Have Seen over the past few months, but there's been so much happening, and I want to continue to illustrate and demonstrate that this show is committed to discussing and acknowledging the bigger things that are happening around us right now that go beyond my normal discussions about show business and the entertainment industry. Let me tell you, in all the work that I've been doing over the past several weeks to become better educated on the subject of racism, social injustice, inequality, etc., it is not easy to talk about it. It's really not. It is not easy. It's not comfortable. You become extremely self-aware and self-conscious, and you're going to hear some of that in this interview. And I think that's part of the beauty of it. So right from the start, I want to thank my amazing friends Tim Parati and Matt Olin for being willing to sit down and have this conversation with me and letting this conversation be recorded and broadcasted. These are two guys with a lot of passion for the subject and wanting to help create real change around racism and systemic racism. So here we go. It was very important to you to keep this as productive and as positive and as genuine and as real as right. As it can be, because, like I said, I mean, I don't know. I'm real. It's a little unnerving because I don't know how this is gonna go.
Right.
Yes.
And it's very sensitive. It's so many different things can trigger so many other different things.
Yeah.
And it just takes sensitivity and it takes patience.
Right.
And listening.
Yeah. So first of all, just right from the top. Right from the get-go, stay on mic. Don't get too far away. We want to hear what you have to say,
okay.
Matt Olin.
Don't get comfortable.
So
there's going to be nothing comfortable about this.
For everyone who's listening, this is welcome. Thanks for joining us here on another episode of You May Have Seen, where we're not talking about acting, really. We're not talking about
special
show
episode.
I know. I want to refrain from saying that because I don't want to minimize it in any way. But it's hard to, you know.
Sure.
The subject matter is so serious that it's easy to want to interject levity, and I think
right.
we can do it and be successful at it. That's great.
Yes.
But yeah, I am here with Matt Olin, one of the co-directors of Charlotte Is Creative, my very, very good friend Matt Olin, and stage cohort in our what seems like forever ago production
that
of The
Odd
Couple.
It was back in 1982, I think.
It feels like 1982.
The Odd Couple.
It feels
couple
so long ago.
Theater Charlotte.
Yeah, and it was only a few months ago.
I have to say, I never actually thought I'd ever be on your podcast because I'm not, truly not an actor. You may have never seen me anywhere because I've never done anything. And yet, here I am on your podcast. So,
yes, you are.
But I do want to point out that your return to stage after how many years?
30?
Was the last bit of live theater happening in the world.
I broke live theater.
You broke right. live theater.
I broke it.
Yeah. Right.
There's not been any live theater since then, I don't believe.
Wow. So,
yeah.
That's a big responsibility to carry. Also, of course, my very good friend Tim Parati, who I've known for 25 years now, over 25 years, 27
wow.
years we've been friends.
Wow.
Former roommate.
Yes.
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 In my wedding party.
Yes.
Of that failed marriage, unfortunately.
Well, you know, they can't all be winners.
And phenomenal actor, whom, just to throw this out there because I think it's connected, whom you may have seen in A Time to Kill years and years ago.
Yes.
R.I.P. Joel.
Joel Schumacher.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, I just released my most recent episode yesterday with Jonathan McFadden and Jessica Tillman, and we talked about racism and inequality and police brutality and all the stuff that's going on right now, because I just feel that it's necessary to discuss it and not pretend like it's not going on and discuss other things. And at the end of our discussion, I asked them, I said, you know, do you think it would be beneficial to have more episodes like this and more conversations like this? And both of them didn't hesitate, and they said, absolutely, we do. They said, we'd love to hear you have the same conversation with two white people. So
this is their fault.
Yeah.
We are the two white people.
And I will, again, openly admit, I am scared to death. But I think it's necessary. They think it's a wonderful idea. Mm-hmm. Tim, you talked to your wife, Kim, about it, and she also, you know.
Yeah, she was very enthusiastic about it.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I have nothing prepared in that I don't have any specific questions that I've put together. I actually turned to Jonathan and Jessica and I asked them, is there anything that you would like to hear us talk about? Mm-hmm. So they actually did write back with some things that I'm going to try and, you know, just get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
And,
I haven't
prepared any answers to any of these questions or thoughts mm-hmm. at all. So we're all going to be flying by the seat of our pants right. and dealing with it together. So Ed, I'm just going to start this way, just like I did with them. How are you guys doing with all of this stuff that's going on, with everything that's been happening?
Like your guest were saying yesterday, if you had asked us, you know, a few weeks ago, it would have been a kind of a different answer. It's been difficult. It's we have not been into any marches or protests, mostly because of COVID-19 and that we have a almost 2-year-old daughter. So, which, you know,
right.
no daycare, no babysitters
yeah.
right now. So we've been trying to stay very safe about all of that. Kim, my wife, who is African-American, she and I felt, it just goes back to this anger, this frustration, all of the feelings mm-hmm. that everyone in the streets and everyone, it seems like an overwhelmingly amount of people now. I think this is the straw that is breaking the camel's back. I
right.
think that there is major change when major corporations and NASCAR and the NFL and all these other people can come out and go, oh, we didn't know. Or, you know, all of a sudden,
sure.
oh, the kneeling was really about that? Oh. So at least they're making changes. So I think that there is some good coming out of this. I
right.
think that I'm going to go all over the place because I don't
yes.
really know.
Yep.
I've been thinking about this. There's three different kinds of groups of, and just to put it where it is, white people right now, the white people kind of thinking. Mm-hmm. There is the people that are deeply ingrained into this way of thinking that people with other skin tones, mm-hmm. for some reason, are not as good as they are.
Right.
And that's ingrained in them, that is there for life probably, that is something that I guess got handed down through generations or something, mm-hmm. it's still incomprehensible to me. I don't understand how anybody could go back and look at pictures of public lynchings, of the jeering of Dorothy Counts going to school at Harding High School, the sit-ins at Woolworth, the mistreatment, the water gun. I mean, how can you look at all of that and from the past 400 years and not feel something
right.
and not just genuinely say that is wrong? So there's those kinds of people, and I'm, you know, whatever background they have or whatever they do for a living or mm-hmm. class or anything else, there are those people, and that will never go away. Hopefully they've kind of been drawn out a little bit more now because of all this is going on and because of our certain current administration. It's kind of drawing them out so now they can be seen. I think they've always been there. You know, they're out in the open, and so now it's, you know, for lack of a better term, they're fair game. On the other side, there are white people who certainly know what has been happening for the last 400 years, opened their hearts and their minds and have embraced the cause and have understood, and whether they have people of color in their life or in their close personal friendships or not, mm-hmm. they still have opened up their hearts and their minds and understand and help any way that they can without trying to have their white privilege dominating the
right.
conversation or whatever.
Right.
And then there's a great vast majority in the middle. And those are people who don't realize what they're doing or thinking. It is mm-hmm. it is an ignorance. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
Right.
I mean that in a literal term. They are ignorant of what is going on or mm-hmm. what has been going on.
Right.
Sure, they know about the civil rights movement. Yes, they know about slavery. Yes, they know about injustices in the world. And I'm sure that, you know, every time a black man gets killed by the police on video or something, yes, they will say something in support or whatever, but then they go back to their normal lives.
Right.
They just don't realize what people of color have to deal with every single day, which kind of goes back to what Kim and I have been kind of dealing with, right. is that Kim is like, it's hard to talk about this without getting emotional.
It's okay.
She talks about this as she protests every day. People of color have to go through life, and this is all from my point of view, you know, hearing and right. seeing and reading about it. Go through life, and like your guests were saying yesterday, they have to go through life in a certain level of normalcy that they can't let out their rage, they cannot let their frustration out, because then they just get referred to as uppity or angry.
Right.
I was rewatching I Am Not Your Negro last night, a mm-hmm. wonderful documentary, James Baldwin, mm-hmm. highly recommended. And he was telling a story on the Dick Cavett Show, and I can't, and I'll paraphrase it because I can't, you know, I'm not good at quoting. But he said that what people don't understand, if any group of white people, Americans, Germans, Russians, you know, in any right. kind of white society, if they feel oppressed, they can take up their guns and say, give me liberty or give me death, and everybody applauds them or says, yes, stand up for your rights. If any group of black people or from a certain country or just a group within a nation does the same thing and says, give me liberty or give me death, they are vilified, they are beaten, they are, this is way paraphrased from right. James Baldwin, mm-hmm. he's right. much right. more eloquent than I. So it's just a double standard, and it has been that way, and it is that way every single day. People of color are judged every single day, mm-hmm. whether they are at the grocery store or at anywhere, just walking down the street or watching birds in the park or, you know, all these videos of these people calling the police on people of color just right. for existing.
Right.
I mean, I think it's good that all these videos are coming out. And so mm-hmm. people are really now going, oh, my God, how can people treat people that way? It's like it happens every day, and it has been happening every day. So that's that huge group in the middle. I keep just saying, educate yourself. Watch I Am Not Your Negro. Read Toni Morrison. Read Ta-Nehisi Coates. Read James Baldwin.
Right.
You know, look at your bookshelf. Look at your movie library. Look at your Netflix queue. Look at your Facebook list of friends. And if it is really not culturally diverse, and I'm not even talking about black artists, I'm talking about people from all cultures. Mm-hmm. If you only have a very narrow line yes. of artists, entertainment,
right.
anything, list of friends, that seems to me a problem. You really... that's my whole point about this whole thing, is so simple to educate yourself and to not run to your nearest, closest black friend that you might have one or two and say, help me, teach me, I don't understand what's going on. You know, it's very, very easy. Just start reading about different cultures, one, especially people in your own community, in your neighborhood, in your life, in your mm-hmm. job. I'm halfway through When They See Us, Ava DuVernay's great series.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's really simple. You will see. And if you do not understand what's going on, if you don't hear and feel something deep in your soul of the injustice of all of this, then you probably are in that first group of people, mm-hmm. and it's just ingrained in you, and that's the way it's going to be.
Right.
So anyway, that huge group of people, and hopefully they will all learn and listen, and then they will go vote. So that's what I have to say. I'm done.
I hope you're not done. I hope you're not completely done. I mean, I can understand all mm-hmm. the passion and the craziness with which you feel like your head is spinning right now.
It
I mean, I can certainly understand and identify with that. Right. So thank you for all of that. Mm. There will be more. Matt?
Yeah.
How you doing with How you doing with all this?
You know, it's been... it's funny, you would think I'd be thinking about my answer, but I wasn't. I was literally locked in,
right.
Laser locked on Tim there. You know, it's been very emotional at our house. Sarah, my wife Sarah, and I are in a constant state of reassessment. How can we help? How can we change the way we live? How can we be of service? How can we change the way that our society is operating? You know, what tools do we have at our disposal to play the smallest part in doing that? We also have a daughter. She just turned 8. Mm-hmm. So that's a whole nother sort of layer going on in our house, which is, how do we talk to her about this? Mm-hmm. We have to talk to her about it. It's very, very important for her to be educated and aware of the world that she's growing up in. It's also hard to talk about. Well, first of all, at 8 years old, you can't expose her to too much. Mm-hmm. I don't yet feel comfortable showing her an 8-plus-minute video of a policeman's knee on a neck. Yeah. That would be traumatizing to an 8-year-old in a way that she's not ready for.
Absolutely.
But we can have the conversations around how the world has been operating for the last 400-plus years. Yeah. And that is even hard because it is the systematic racism and the inequities is so much, it's the water that our society swims in that it's even hard to get perspective on it sometimes because mm-hmm. it is just everywhere.
Yeah. Right.
And so when I say that I'm emotional and that we are emotional, it's because it's this weird combination of hopeful and hopeless. And it's like an mm-hmm. equal combination of those two feelings. Mm-hmm. We feel hopeful that we are at a place and time where maybe this is different, as you and I have spoke, Brian, that this moment feels different than all the others on some level. And maybe that's because one of the gifts of the pandemic is that this is now demanding our undivided attention because mm-hmm. we're not as distracted as we typically are. Mm-hmm. But also it does feel, on the flip side of that coin, it feels hopeless on some days. I should use the language that my therapist uses, which is parts of me feel hopeful and parts of me feel hopeless. It's not me totally. It's parts of me. It's the little boys and of all different ages that make up who I am. So there are parts of me that feel hopeless too. That feels like this is such a huge problem that's been around for so long, and people are, there are so many people in that first group, Tim, that are never going to change. Mm-hmm. And then there are so many people in that middle group that need to change. Mm-hmm. Where do we begin? Mm-hmm. So my parts are at war around this.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly feel, very similar. And I talked about it in the previous interview. So far, even after our conversation about this one being different, I still don't know I'll just be completely honest. In our lifetime, I don't think that we will ever get to full equality and justice in our lifetime.
Not the place that we all want to be.
No.
I am hopeful that things can improve, and I think that we're on to something to help move that forward, if for no other reason than here we are. We're having this conversation. Mm-hmm. I've had this podcast for 2 years. Mm-hmm. A year ago, I wasn't having these conversations. Colleen and I, similarly, are still talking about it every day, mm-hmm. and I think that's... while really, really microscopic on the grand scale, I think it's huge in that, again, like Tim, like you said in the email when we first were coordinating this, keeping the conversation going and not letting it die out like it normally does, the normal patterns that we've, as a society seem to have fallen into are, I think, extremely important to help make that change.
And I think, and being more intentional about the way that we operate in the world from this point forward. For example, if I'm going to hire somebody, why not take that extra step to say, no, I'm actually going to commit to hiring a Black creative for this project because it feels right, because I want to use...
You want that point of view.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want that point of view. I want to expand the network of people that I work with, that I collaborate with. And sometimes it just takes being super intentional about choosing to operate in that way rather than just going to the same Rolodex every day. And how do we, first of all, assess what are the platforms we have access to? And this, Brian, your podcast is a perfect example. This podcast is a platform that you have, that you have intentionally chosen to shift over to this conversation. And that is another way of saying, we're going to start operating differently. We're going to start recognizing the platforms we have and using them to hopefully implement the change that we all know needs to happen.
Yeah, I don't know what the reaction is going to be or what the response is going to be or if people are going to listen because they're so used to listening to me, interview very, very talented, non-famous career, wonderful actors who have fantastic stories, and it's an excellent escape. This is not an escape. This is a, you know, an awareness wake-up call. Hey, pay attention, right in your face. So it's going to be very different. I'm going to be interested to see, you know, how people respond to it.
Well,
for sure.
I agree with Matt. I think that anyone with a platform, you know, a lot of celebrities certainly say their minds on social media and say what they really think because they have the platform and people will listen to them. Like Angelina Jolie used to say, if you want to take pictures of me, instead of walking down the street with my kids, come with me to Cambodia or, you know, use that platform. So I think that you using this platform, no matter how big your audience is it's the new normal. And right now, everything has changed because of the pandemic and because of all this. There is three hurricanes going on right now. It's like the pandemic, the protesting and the marching in the streets, and the administration.
Right.
The old way of life was too complacent. And sure, it's going to be inconvenient to have to deal with masks like we were talking about all day.
Right.
There's going to be a new, I don't even know if normal is the right word anymore, because it's going to be an ever-changing thing because it's all mixed up together. And I do think that right now there is a civil war of some kind going on.
Yeah, right.
Excuse me. That there is a those people versus those people. But here lately, and I don't want to say the people on the left, or I don't want to say our side, or I don't want to say whatever. But the clear thinkers, the people that are making sense, and that all this other stuff that we're talking about too strikes a chord. It's understandable, you know, human rights, just, I mean, all of that, if you want to call it the left, right now, it seems much greater than the other side.
Right.
I, in the last couple of weeks, have felt a little hope that good will win out.
Yes. A little hope.
I do want to just circle back about 2-3 minutes ago when we were talking about platforms, because one of the things I'm aware of is that not everyone has a podcast, right? Or in my case, over at our nonprofit, Charlotte's Creative, we have a media channel, we have a monthly event, various other tools at our disposal as well. That's our platform. But your platform may be your family. Your platform might be your the break room at your business.
Yes. If you hear something, say something.
Right, right. So sometimes it's I think people can get hung up on that idea, like, well, I don't have a podcast. I don't do this. I don't do that. Everyone has a different platform, and sometimes it's a small, intimate platform that change can be made right then and there.
Yeah. If your grandmother is saying something that you really deep down feel is wrong, tell her.
Yeah.
Say something, or the people at work, or anything.
All right. Well, then, with that, then I'm going to take us down this road. I'm going to address some of the stuff that that Jonathan and Jessica put to me, and I'm going to put it to the three of us. One of the things that they asked was, as a white person, how you can participate in dismantling the system of racism and oppression within your families and communities. Furthermore, have you seen racist or unjust acts and not spoken up in the past?
I mean, I have to go back to the what I was saying earlier, which is sort of really doing inventory on what tools you have access to, whether it's a platform or whether it is a skill that you have. Maybe you fancy yourself a good writer. Well, maybe now would be a great time to start a blog talking about this or advocating for the change that you you see is needed. So I think that is, for me, a really important, and it doesn't have to be perfect. That's the other thing. I mean, this right now, three white males sitting around talking about this topic is far from perfect.
No,
but it's but it's something. Mm-hmm. And it was Jonathan Jessica's idea too. Just want to throw that back in again. so it doesn't have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. I think it's okay for all of us to embrace the fact that this is hard, messy stuff. And so I think a lot of people are held back by the fear that they're going to say something wrong and that that will really come back to bite them. I have that fear.
Yes.
I would be lying if I told you I didn't have that fear. I'll probably say multiple wrong things in this conversation, but I just don't think we can allow ourselves to let that hold us back. We have to start talking bigger, with more people mm-hmm. and just get messy.
White fragility. Yeah. White fragility.
White fragility. The book's at home.
Yes, I am going to make mistakes, and we've probably already made a few dozen so far in just the short time that we've been talking.
I've heard that. I've seen that a lot on people's social media, that they want to say something, but they don't know what to say. They want to be an ally. They want to be correct, and they want to be kind and supportive and everything else. But there are, and just, I mean, nobody's monolithic. So there are certain thoughts about what to say and how you can help and how you can't help. And sometimes it's just like, stay out of it. But it's, you know, so a lot of people that of that middle group of white people are confused, I think, and they are scared about saying the right thing. They don't want to come across as just jumping on the bandwagon. So I have seen also on social media a lot of people doing what I was talking about, just educating themselves, just reading, mm-hmm. you know, black authors and watching stuff. They said that these shows on Netflix are booming. I mean, the ratings are whatever. So that shows to me that people are taking it upon themselves to go, let me educate myself.
Yeah, I was having
a
difficult conversation with one of my family members, because I mean, I know my family. Mm-hmm. they've been a huge part of my life for 50 years.
Sure.
So I mean, while we've never actually sat down and discussed this mm-hmm. subject recently. I've wanted to, and mm-hmm. it's been very much like walking on eggshells, like how do I introduce the subject? How mm-hmm. do I get them to talk about it? And just talk about it, you know, without it being accusatory
it's
really just letting it be a discussion, mm-hmm. You know, and it's not easy to navigate.
Right.
You know, I was talking to one of, again, my family members. I'm so afraid still, I'm not even going to get specific as to who it was. He said some things that I was like, man, I can't believe you just said that out mm-hmm. loud. But at the end of the conversation, he came back to me and he was like, what was that documentary on Netflix that you were suggesting? And it's mm-hmm. like, well, look, if he's even remotely open to...
Just planting seeds.
To just even see if he could possibly agree with or be open to...
Right. People have to do things in their own time.
Yeah.
And like I said, that first group, they're just not even interested. The middle group, I think that they, like I said, this is kind of just the bigger straw. I think you're right. As far as my personal background goes, my parents were pretty liberal, and I was raised pretty liberal, and they were very aware of the civil rights movement and Equal Rights Amendment, and just all these other things back then, because mm-hmm. I'm a little older than you, so you know my formative years were all through that time, and we grew up mm-hmm. knowing about stuff. I'm not saying I'm an expert because
no,
I grew
sure.
up that way,
right.
or anything like that, but you know, I guess I got a head start on a lot of people because we did talk about stuff like that, and we had books on our shelves about
that's good
things, so that helped in my development. And honestly, and I'll say this, we're being very honest here, it wasn't until I got involved in an interracial relationship that the doors like slammed open.
Sure, sure.
Okay, because I was in an ignorant part myself. I was thinking, well, yeah, I mean, this happens, but oh my God, you know, if you have a person of color in your everyday life that you're intimately involved with, mm-hmm. you suddenly see it. And it took me a while. And Kim would get frustrated with me sometimes. And it was, like I said, the doors got slammed open. And now, and this is another thing I'm kind of dealing with now, we have a child of mixed race.
Yeah.
And for so long, there has been the one drop rule, which dates back to, you know, slavery. If you have one drop of black blood in you, you are considered a black person. And a lot of people have adopted that. And a lot of people have embraced that. Now, I think that there's more, you know, you can't turn on the TV without seeing an interracial couple on selling toilet paper or Cheerios
or
whatever. You know, it's like, we're just like, oh my God, you know.
Yeah.
For a while, I was documenting and just trying to take pictures of those things. It's like so many now. It's like every commercial, which is great. And that means that people are trying to reach out to people and they're open-minded. And the statistics, whatever they are, of interracial marriages being one of the fastest growing mm-hmm. statistics in the country. So I'm starting to do research on how people of mixed heritage are approaching life now. Yeah. And yes, I have a black daughter, but I also have a mixed daughter. And so what does that mean? And, you know, I know some mixed people totally embrace one side or the other. I don't know if that's the right way to go with mm-hmm. our daughter. I don't know. She certainly is going to make her own mind up when mm-hmm. she's growing and things like that. And I don't want to demean anyone else that does that. I'm just wonder. It's a curiosity now. I'm wondering how are we going to deal with that? So I'm educating myself right. on what it is to be blended or mixed or whatever the correct term is.
Right.
I think mixed right now is a correct term. What does that mean in today's society? And there's so many young people now that are, and how do they deal with it? And how are they? It is confusing for them because they do have two sides. You know, they do have two different families mm-hmm. and stuff. So for me, that's my new journey too, is understanding what it is to be mixed in yeah. today's society.
Again, personally, and this is the last part of this question, as far as having seen racist or unjust acts and not spoken up in the past, all I can say is I'm sure I have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'm sure that I
yeah.
have.
That's the thing.
I can't be specific because right. I allowed myself to just go, mm-hmm. I don't say anything, or I can't do anything about it.
Right.
Who's going to, you know, I'm sure that I have.
We,
I'm certain.
We can't sidestep that part of the question, and it's there's 100% certainty that I have as well. Mm-hmm. All I can say about it is I think... it takes a lot of courage to speak up against something mm-hmm. in the moment. And I think that courage comes with maturity. So when I was younger, mm-hmm. yeah, it was the default setting is to just shut up, stay mm-hmm. in line, and
right.
don't make enemies. As you get older, you begin to realize that that ain't no way to live.
Right.
And hopefully you have you can speak more articulately about it. You can speak more passionately about it, and maybe you have some way of amplifying it mm-hmm, as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that comes with the courage. But yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
I've always been, and it's just part of my nature, I've not been a... Confrontation is not something that
right.
I do. I'm an observer.
Yeah.
I sit back. I watch people. I kind of always see myself up on the hilltop watching this flow of river and humanity going by, and I'm just like, whatever. But not whatever, but observing
no, right.
it and
right.
and taking it in, but not jumping in.
Right.
So I am trying to do better myself about jumping in if I see or hear things. I'm sure, like you guys, I'm sure that there has been
mm-hmm.
times.
Yeah.
But
at the same time, I will openly admit if we walk out the door and I see something, I can't say for certain that I will be able to mm-hmm. Jump in the way that I should.
Mm-hmm.
I hope so, but mm-hmm. I.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be. I know it's going to continue to be
I'm sure
a challenge.
It depends on the situation.
Of course,
someone's getting hurt or
right.
something. But even like you said, just minor things. I think if you can now find the courage and if you educate yourself, you're going to know what to say. If you do see
yes.
someone,
yes.
a white woman yelling at a Latina in the grocery store or something, and spitting on their child, this is the new video
oh
of this woman spitting on her child.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
I have not seen that.
Yeah, and I would think. Now that I would be able to confront this woman or
yeah.
say something or...
More with Tim Parati and Matt Olin in just a minute. You're listening to You May Have Seen, proud member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. There are so many great podcasts on the network showcasing great stories by great people and shining a spotlight on the Queen City. You can find them all at queencitypodcastnetwork.com. Shoutouts! In an effort to bring both sides of the You May Have Seen podcast together, both Conversations for Change and the entertainment industry, here are some great shows, specials, and movies to check out. When They See Us, the amazing four-part series by Ava DuVernay on Netflix. That's a story about the Central Park Five that happened back in the late 1980s. The performances are amazing and heartbreaking to see what these five teenagers had to go through. It's just shocking. Notes from the Field. Anna Deavere Smith's amazing one-woman show on HBO, based on hundreds of interviews that she conducted with current and former inmates, protesters, educators, and politicians. It showcases actual video footage from a number of the incidents that have sparked a lot of the outrage and conversations we're having. So prepare yourself for that. She's amazing, and it hits really hard. And go back and watch A Time to Kill, featuring one of today's guests, Tim Parati. As I mentioned in the intro, Tim plays a member of the KKK in A Time to Kill. And I'm sure just by listening to what you've heard so far, he is the furthest thing from that. So from an acting experience, boy, I can't imagine what that was like for him. And I remember how challenging it was for him, but also how important it was for him to be able to be a part of that storytelling. So yeah, go check it out again. Okay, here's more with Tim and Matt.
Jonathan asks, I'd love to know how people are feeling now, but also how they felt during Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, who was shot 6 times in Ferguson, Freddie Gray, who was the young man who died in the police van ride, or from the police van ride, and the many others who police killed before George Floyd. I'd like to know their takes, meaning our takes, on systemic racism and whether they thought it went away after the civil rights movement.
Never, ever thought it went away, but back to the distraction of our world, the same media that delivers these traumatic pieces of information to us is the same beast that then distracts us away from it all as well.
Right.
And pre-COVID, pre-pandemic, it was just so easy to get upset, emotional, cry. There's been lots of emotion in our family over the years.
Mm-hmm.
In absence of the groundswell that I feel like we're experiencing right now, things go back to normal. So you have this like moment of outrage,
right?
And then it's like, oh, it's Monday. I got to go back to work. It's such a part of the tragedy of this. And so, me personally, of course, aware that it's always been around. It is the water we swim in, and yet succumbed to the distraction of our media-driven world now.
I agree, and I think that for that middle group of people, they really have to be hit over the head many, many times with things. Speaking of the straw that broke the camel's back about instances like these, yes, I mean, every single time that this happens, or even just at Amy Cooper's and the Karens on the phones or whatever, you do get that, and it just kind of builds up. And I think that's what it is, like he was saying yesterday, that on your podcast that was released yesterday. It finally has spilled over the top. It's been boiling and steaming for so long that it has. And so, oh, man, I keep thinking of so many different things I want to say, and then they go away before I get to them. So I'll come back to it, and I'll interrupt.
It's okay.
You just got to speak like an auctioneer so you get it all out before it's gone.
Yeah.
Continuing on with Jonathan, Jonathan's a writer, as we talked about in the last interview, and he wrote a blog that I read, and it just absolutely just shattered me and broke my heart, and I wanted to bring up some of the things that he wrote about. You know, it was sort of the title of it was "I'm Torn About This New Yay Black Lives Matter Movement." And I just want to touch on some of the things that he wrote that I'd love for us to talk about that just really were, I hate that there are people who are being affected this way. He's like, I'm sad that it took watching a man die on camera for people to finally get it. I'm sad it took 400 years of black people being enslaved, tortured, hunted, lynched, beaten, oppressed, disenfranchised, marginalized, excessively imprisoned, and publicly executed for people to finally get it. Still, I'm wrestling with questions. Did most white people simply not believe us? Were they really that oblivious? Did they think that we were playing the race card, over-exaggerating, being too sensitive, perpetuating the biggest hoax of all time? Was our pain not worth their attention? There's nothing wrong with forging ahead, but there's also value in acknowledging the blemishes of the past, your past, so you grow instead of just react to a new set of circumstances. And I'm taking some of these things out because they're the ones that stood out to me. The news cycle will change. Another story will break. National outrage will cool. And I'll still wear black skin. Will we keep the same energy? Time will tell. Perhaps I should stop focusing so much on what didn't happen and focus on what is happening. But I'll be honest. It's hard for me. But I'm also concerned this torrent of black love is a reactionary trend that could fizzle with time.
Right. Yes. And I think that, like you were saying, Matt, it's life gets in the way, and believe me, with a 2-year-old running around, oh my God, I can't keep a thought in my head for a minute before I have to grab something that's being pulled down or something. But, and I'm a good multitasker.
Yes.
But what you were saying, is it just a flash in the pan moment?
And why did it take so long?
Why
to get to this point where, I mean, the height, you know, it's, to me, in my lifetime, I've never seen it heighten this much, the awareness, the attention, the activity, the
Because
enthusiasm.
I think, and this is one of the two things I meant to say earlier, that for white people, it is not, we're not slapped in the face every single day.
Right.
And so it is easy for us to get distracted and go, oh, well, I have to get dinner ready.
And
or I have to do this or whatever. People of color have to also go to work, take care of their kids, get dinner ready, but still deal with that. And not just from what's on the news, it affects their daily lives every single day, every single moment. Again, it's a strength and resolve that, that people of color have that they can, I guess, absorb it or take it and still it's raging, but they have to go to work and they have to maintain their lives. And they have to also put on the facade of being okay. Or and being careful not to piss off a white person or irritate a white person or even, you know, mildly inconvenience a white person or it's going to turn into a thing.
It's so, it just seems like it's such a part of the DNA of our country. You know, black people built the country.
Yes.
That inequity is such, and then suddenly, not suddenly, but a part of that fabric is that white people are superior to people of any other background, and that becomes a part of the very DNA of the country, and the train leaves the station, and the train left the station, and it's never stopped.
Right.
To ask the question, how many more will it take? That is almost an impossible question to answer.
It's taken this long to have become what it is, and it's still not there. Like you said, it's not going to, in our lifetime, it's probably never going to be eradicated. So
the system is broken, but I would assert that the model, the country, was delivered from the factory with way too many flaws in it. I mean, it is an inoperable mechanism, I think, and that is why we have all these problems. It's so ingrained in our society. How do we dismantle the system? How do we dismantle the system and rebuild? And unfortunately, I think it's going to have to involve generations of Americans dying off. To be sort of replenished with people who get it, who understand that everyone is equal.
Right, and that's what it is getting people to understand that, because there are so many people. Yes, history is important, and history, and certainly your forefathers are important. You got to take it into what has become of that, you know. And yes, if your ancestors fought in the Civil War on the side of the South. Yes, that is part of your family's history, and you can keep that, and you can even embrace it, but understand what it means in the bigger picture, you know? And think about a friend at work's ancestors who were not on the good side of that arrangement that your forefathers were. So just have an understanding. It's just so sad to see people clinging on to something. And I know it's a slippery slope because somebody pointed out the other day, well, you know, Yale is named after someone who, and I don't know the facts on that, but, you know, are you going to change every single name, you know, get rid of George Washington, get rid of, you know, everything. Right. It's a very slippery slope, and yes, but there are certain things, I think, that absolutely... saw a meme the other day. It's like, if somebody says save the whales, it doesn't mean fuck all the other fish.
It
just means the whales really need your attention.
Yeah, somebody else said that about cancer. Like when they do breast cancer awareness, it's not like, hey, what about all the other cancers?
Right, it's not.
No one objects that way.
So, right.
I know your family really, really well. Your parents are awesome.
Brian's pointing at me, Matt Olin.
Well, yes, because you're going to answer this. Okay. You're going to respond to this really quickly.
just doing color commentary for the listeners.
But I also know that your parents tend to fall a little bit more on the conservative side, or at least when I first started to get to know them. Tim, your folks, unfortunately, are no longer with us.
No.
Right. You're married to an African-American woman.
Yes.
With a daughter as well.
Yes.
What are the conversations like within your family, or have there been any? I'm certain that there have been for you, Tim, but what's it been like for you with your folks or your family? Or have you even had the opportunity to have those conversations?
We have not had deep, expansive conversations about what's happening in the world right now. I will say that I've really admired the growth and evolution of my parents over the decades.
Yeah.
Because when I was a kid, I believe they were sort of fully on the Republican side. But Republicans sort of meant something different back then,
sure.
too, it seems. Mm-hmm. But they were sort of, yeah, conservative Republicans. We grew up Catholic, mm-hmm. You know, check the boxes. Yeah. But
yeah, right there with
but
you.
Over the years, they've willingly exposed themselves to people of different backgrounds, different lifestyles, and have come to accept and love. And that, to me, has been a remarkable journey to watch them go through. Because so much of what we inherit from generation to generation just ends up defining who we are. We put our blinders on. This is who I am. This is how I think. This is the way the world is. And to be able to shift your mindset and open your heart mm-hmm. is a beautiful, beautiful journey to be on. And I've seen my parents do that for decades now. So that's been cool. But that said, there is opportunity for lots of great conversation to be happening in our family right now.
Right.
And it'd be interesting to see what your daughter says to them sometimes, because children now, you know, they don't have that.
No filter.
No right. filter. So right. it'd be interesting to see how that, from her point of view. My family's a little different because my dad, his family was much older. Mm-hmm. He came along late in their lives, so a lot of that part of that family was gone a long time ago.
Right.
As well as my mother's side of the family. I mean, my dad got in trouble for having his hair too long in the PTA, you know, at school. You know, it was like...
probably dancing, too.
Probably dancing.
All that dancing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember being the only child in my class whose my parents were voting for McGovern, and I got teased about it because everybody else is voting for Nixon. And
oh
it was like,
gosh.
Well, you know... But still, even in that bastion of liberal wonderfulness or whatever, there's still some ignorance. There's still some things that don't occur to you. Mm-hmm. Or there's been a lot of talk, especially now that I have a black wife.
Yeah.
Again, doors are opening right. for all of us, about opening doors and getting to know people.
Now,
get to know me.
Are you familiar I've heard and seen, and that a lot of black families, or most black, if not all of them, and I apologize if that's too general to anyone who's mm-hmm. listening, with their children, at some point they have to have the talk.
The talk. Yeah, I mean,
certainly
heard about that. And well, yeah, that goes back to what I'm trying to now, yeah. while she's still two, and right. yes, she's learning how to talk, and she can say Pete the cat, you know, very clearly, very, very clearly, and other things every day. It's like something. How did you even? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think all this time being stuck in a house with two adults, mm-hmm. she's rapidly developing. What was the thing?
But you as a white man growing up white, now are you having to prepare yourself, or have you
right.
to have to have that?
That's
talk
what
with
I
her
that's
someday?
What I was saying is to I'm trying to educate myself now before yeah. I would have to have the talk with yeah. her, or we would have.
Do
to
you
have
feel
to
like it's going to be necessary to have it?
I think it will. Yeah,
yeah.
I think so. But like I said, she's two now.
Sure.
She's almost two, and she'll be two in August. We're trying to educate ourselves about that. Certainly, we'll have the talk about, you know, being careful and
right.
and be aware of your surroundings. We always say that to each other.
Yeah.
And I have said all my life, my mom, every time I would leave her presence or leave the house or anything else, she would always say, be careful. Just covers a lot of ground, mm-hmm. no matter with it's don't, you know, run into something or don't, you know, be careful driving, be careful with other, you know, anything.
Right.
So I have adopted that. I say it all the time to both Kim and our daughter. Certainly we will have that talk with her, mm-hmm. but also, like I said, I'm educating myself about what it is to be a person of blended backgrounds now, and what will it be like when she's 10 years old or 16 years old, and you know, what will society be like then? So yeah, I'm just trying to get a head start on that, and you know.
Yeah.
I have to deal with that.
I got to admit, it's been challenging for me as I continue to do research and educate myself and try and absorb as much as I can to change mm-hmm. the way that I've always viewed things or responded or reacted, whether consciously or not. Like when Jonathan asked the question about basically where were you with Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, mm-hmm. Freddie Gray, and all the others, mm-hmm. I had to go back and look them up,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and I feel horrible,
mm-hmm.
you know. White guilt, there you go. That it's like, you know, and it's so,
Well, I think it's because there's been so many, too,
mm-hmm.
Sure. It is hard to keep every story straight.
Right.
There's certainly iconic names that stand out from the long list of names that are kind of almost like benchmarks or mm-hmm. something. I think it just adds, each story adds to the thing. But that's the good part of it. You're going back and you're learning about these and you're reading. And now we have all
right.
this documentation. You know, years ago, they would be in the history books, or not even in the history books,
yeah,
which we're
right.
finding out now.
Right.
We're
yeah.
watching
right.
Watchmen, and I didn't know about Tulsa myself.
Right.
I knew about some other things, Rosewood and some other stuff, but, you know, it's not taught in schools. It was not taught in our history classes growing up in middle class, and I was bussed, and I've always had people of color in all my classes from, mm-hmm. maybe not kindergarten, but yeah, I think from like
right.
first grade on, and so... But so to imagine that, being a person of color sitting in history class and not hearing your story and your
exactly.
side, and even that's what I hear all the time is, you know, and you go back and you watch, oh, Disney Channel's got all the old cartoons and then it's got this and it's got this. And you go back and look at them and it's all white.
Yes.
And it's like, yes. what the hell? You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. yeah.
There was something we were watching. I was like, oh my God, baby, you have to watch this. It was so great when I was growing up and whatever. And oh, it was Laugh-In. And Laugh-In came on and I was like, oh, this is Laugh-In. It was the funniest show in the world. And we started watching it and it was white. And then Flip Wilson comes on as Geraldine.
Oh my gosh.
Or any person of color that was on it, it was a racial joke. There was even like a,
right.
Somebody the Klan, dressed as a Klansman, but you know the black actor was controlling it. Whatever, they were being politically correct, I guess. But whatever, it was still. I went, oh my God, you know,
yeah.
and yeah, go back and watch things that you loved as a child and realize not a person of color's face anywhere around it unless they were the help.
Right.
So
right.
and that's
right.
why. When even now, when you see shows, a great show, it's called Mrs. America. It's on Hulu.
Yes.
Cate Blanchett.
Yep.
It's about Equal Rights Amendment.
Yep.
You know, at least they're, you know, taking in, of course, they're including Shirley Chisholm, but they're, you know, you can linger on the black housekeeper's face a little bit longer and see what she's really thinking, you know?
Right.
Yeah. The past, even in our middle class lives, we grow up watching all the stuff on TV and then... Think about being a little kid watching TV, and I will say this, and you can cut this out later. If
sure.
says no,
right.
but she used to watch Dukes of Hazzard, loved it.
Yeah.
Loved Dukes of Hazzard.
Right.
And then finally one day she was like, oh, wait a minute. You know, the car. And
that's
the,
a Confederate flag on the top of the car.
There's a Confederate flag on the car. So,
yeah.
It was,
I grew up watching the Dukes of Hazzard too.
Not only watching the Dukes of Hazzard,
playing the Dukes of Hazzard. I think I was Bo, or I can't remember if it was Bo or Luke.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
you know, we didn't have the right. filter at that age
right.
to be like, oh,
right.
this has a whole lot right. of meaning attached to it that hurt is very hurtful.
Exactly. And even going up to Friends, and, you know, Friends is the most popular show in the world, and even the creator of Friends has now come out going, oh, yeah, I probably should have put some black people in that show because it takes place in New York.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, imagine living that life, going through, watching TV, movies, everything else, and not seeing somebody that represents you.
Right. So then there you go. Perfect
to
transition to the next question. How many black friends do you have? And whether or not you think it's important to socialize with people outside of your comfort zone. And she even goes on to say, I have black friends who also don't have white friends, mm-hmm. so they have no idea what you all think or believe.
Shall we flip out the Facebook lists? And
I'm going to make it even more specific. You know, like true friends close in my inner circle. No, I don't. Like the people that I confide in and know my, you know, mm-hmm. I'm trying to change that. I mean, I have several black friends that sort of are on the, you know,
right.
the second tier
second
level.
Level.
Yeah, but I mean, but
friends.
At the same,
yeah.
but, you know, and this is me defending. I mean, you and I, again, have known each other for almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
We used to be super close. Mm-hmm. We hardly ever get to see each other anymore.
Right.
I love your wife.
Right.
We see each other once a year at the Christmas party just
right.
because life
right.
takes you in different directions.
Sure. It's very busy.
Do I need to make more of a conscious effort? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, yes, but
because
also
I do think it's important.
Also, but you don't want to go start recruiting just to be.
No,
you
don't want
to,
it's not tokenism.
Quota,
no,
yeah.
of course not. No, not at all.
Right.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But I mean, you
yeah.
know, I do have a lot of
black friends that I am associated with, that I do, you know, connect and relate to, that I are wonderful and are extremely important to me. And but when I think about it on that, but there's so much that I don't know about them, and then there's so much on the up that they don't know about me. It's like, damn, that's mm-hmm. that's kind of sad to think about. So but yeah, I probably do need to do something right. about that.
I think it's also a result of, I don't know what it's a result of. I was going to say, just certainly for us growing up, neighborhoods and things. So you saw people of color at school, but then, you know, when you get home, you're in your neighborhood and there was nobody else around or whatever.
What I'm being moved to say right now is to acknowledge the incredible blessing that being a part of the Charlotte creative community has been for me.
Good, I'm glad you said that.
Because I mean, whether it's, again, through our media channel, The Biscuit, or through our event series, Creative Mornings Charlotte, or our HUG grant program, mm-hmm. or whatever, the number of black creatives that I've been able to be introduced to get to know, to mm-hmm. collaborate with, to shine a light on, to just, quite frankly, bask in the glow of.
And you guys were helped get the street painting going.
Spearheaded. I was going to bring that up.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that was a... I mean, talk about an honor to be... for our nonprofit, Charlotte is Creative, to have been one of the organizations to essentially to get the Black Lives Matter street mural underway mm-hmm. and to be able to pull in the right team members to pull something of that complexity off in record time, 72 hours. Brand the Moth and Black Market CLT and quite frankly the city. I mean, the city of Charlotte did have to mm-hmm. be on board. In fact, it was Taiwo Jayobi, the city planner and assistant city manager, who it was originally his idea. Mm. And it came to sort of putting the pieces together to pull something like that off. I mean, what a blessing to be a part of that. Mm. And then to just be able to look around me and see the work that people like the Threets are doing at Hope Vibes and Winston Robinson and Daryl Gaston and Jonathan McFadden mm-hmm. and Melody Gross. I mean, we could spend a whole nother episode just listing the names of incredible black creatives in town mm-hmm. who are doing amazing things.
Right. We're now getting a platform and getting some, I guess, a wider recognition too.
I mean, it's just such a... So, I don't know, I just wanted to pause and just acknowledge mm-hmm. the incredible gift that it is to just mm-hmm. be able to call them fellow citizens and to be able to know them and admire their work.
Now, can I ask you this? Because I have heard some things that when the mural was done and that there was responses from the black community on some level, even if it was just individually, where some were like, that's really great, but...
Yeah. Oh, sure. There is, anytime something like that makes a splash and mm-hmm. Ends up dominating social media for a while, I mean, you're going to have every opinion in the book, mm-hmm. including people say, that's great. Now what? That's always been a part of our narrative.
Yeah.
My wife will say in her coaching profession, the mantra is awareness plus action equals results.
Right.
Awareness plus mm-hmm. action equals results. So if a mural project is able to boost awareness mm-hmm. Of the movement mm-hmm. and that can then incite action,
right,
then maybe we get a step or two closer to the results that we're looking for.
Right.
So it involves conversation that I think there are people in town that they jump to conclusions.
So right.
That there are people with big platforms who may even say, make a post that says, well, a lot of good that's going to do. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's such a, it's an insult to the creatives who are putting their time and effort and blood, sweat, and tears into advancing a movement that mm-hmm. is so critical to advance. And then look, within 24 hours, we had people purposely screeching their tires on the mural mm-hmm. to deface it.
Mm-hmm. And posting about it.
And posting about it and bragging about it. And so, yet again, you got to pull the team together. You got to get the city to say, we're going to fix this. Mm-hmm. And so the street is now temporarily, indefinitely mm-hmm. shut down.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
To traffic. Yeah.
The artist came back, they repaired it, they enhanced it. They're mm-hmm. now exploring coating it with a clear paint, mm-hmm. with a clear mm-hmm. coating to further protect it. This is about preservation of some seemingly historic moment mm-hmm. in the city. And if you haven't been up there to see it, please do go see it, because it is, it's a gathering spot now. Mm-hmm. It's a, to me, it feels like a sacred spot.
Mm-hmm. I haven't had a chance to go up there yet. I want to.
Yeah.
It's a there's a sacred atmosphere there, and not only does that mural stand in solidarity with the movement, mm-hmm. but it also went the extra step of each of those remarkable artists mm-hmm. bringing their own design to their letter that they were assigned to. So it operates on a whole nother level where it shines a light on the diversity of our creative mm-hmm. community here. So
and Charlotte jumped on that wonderful opportunity before Los Angeles and now Spartanburg is doing, you know,
Seattle. We actually, interestingly enough, because our organization is listed as one of the four collaborators mm-hmm. entities that help pull it off, we are now on the receiving end daily on the receiving end
How
of emails from yeah. cities saying, you know, we want to do something just what you guys did, just mm-hmm. like what you guys did in Melbourne, mm-hmm. in Seattle, mm-hmm. in Palo Alto, and yeah. just tons of cities that saw the coverage mm-hmm. and are trying to get guidance on right. how to pull it off too. Right. What an honor!
Yeah,
yeah.
What an honor!
I will say about going back to the question about Black friends. I've always been kind of a loner, and so I've had groups of friends over the years, but ultimately it always kind of pull back and not really have a lot of really really close friends.
Right.
Not to say that I'm, you know, standoffish or whatever.
Right.
But you know, I'm a nice guy.
You are a nice guy.
Yes, my group of friends, my close friends, was pretty white until I got involved with Kim. And since then, again, doors opened. And now, and plus we live in a very diverse community.
Yes.
Our neighbors, you know, if we're outside, we can see neighbors of all kinds, from all walks of life, walk down the street mm-hmm. and very close to several in the neighborhood. And my friends list has gained a lot more colors in it, so that's a good thing. But yeah, it's just another thing that you can do. It's just, like I said, not trying to, you know, get points or whatever, but no, right. yeah, just get to know people, and right. maybe, you know, some good friendships will come out of that.
I was having a conversation with another friend of mine about the subject, who, and he, in his defense, was in favor of the movement and supportive and all that stuff, but he probably falls in that middle group that mm-hmm. you were talking about. And he was saying or alluding to that he feels like the Black community needs to clean up their act to some extent, like the poorer community. But I mean, I'm not, that's not a direct quote,
right.
but he was basically saying that it's their responsibility to improve
act more white.
To improve their situation mm-hmm. in wow. order to, I guess, you know, have people take them or to get the attention that they want. And I actually said, I couldn't disagree with you mm-hmm. more. Mm-hmm. I said, I feel like it's our responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to know what you guys thought about that. I feel like we are we have a huge responsibility right now to assist in any way mm-hmm. that we can.
Oh, if I was in the room with you, I would have said the same thing.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
Yeah.
Disagree with that perspective more, and it is absolutely our responsibility. It's our collectively we.
And at the same time, isn't it unfortunate that like that the members of the Black community that have not been able to get the support that they deserve and should have had, and
right.
that it would
and
take
I think,
us.
Yeah, and I think mm-hmm. not to speak for the Black community, but I do think that they have been trying for a long time
absolutely.
To, you know, be considered equal or
yes.
just, you know, human beings. I just wanted to say about that middle group of people also, that includes the vast majority of people who consider themselves progressive, who consider themselves woke and alert and everything else, and they think that they are, but they are only scratching the surface mm-hmm. and they really aren't. It really is a simple thing. And the whole police thing, yes, absolutely, we need police reform. We need, you see all these incidents and you go, how can that possibly happen? How can those officers not be punished or
right.
at least suspended or
held accountable,
fired or something, held accountable, much less charged? I personally, I don't know about abolishing the police system. I really kind of think that we probably should have some law enforcement at some point.
Sure.
I keep thinking of Escape to New York and I'm like, we don't want it to, you know, whatever. But certainly reform and just reform on all levels of just educate yourself and mm-hmm. and listen and learn. If those images don't if they don't offend you, if they don't upset you, if they don't get into your heart and your soul, then personally, I think that's just that's kind of a lost cause, and you're just going to stay in your little world and surround yourself with the people that you that think exactly like you, and that's fine. But don't, and yes, you have freedom of speech to say whatever you want to, but realize that there are a whole, I think that's the whole, the outcome of this whole thing is that there are, all the people that have been on the side of the road are now coming out, or a lot of them, and saying, wow, this is wrong. We have to do something with this, and hopefully that will pay off in November.
Yeah. You know, the cliche of change is uncomfortable is a cliche for a reason, and you know, as it relates to this, I think the discomfort that we all of us need to embrace and actually run headlong into is whatever discomfort you may feel from educating yourself, taking the time to educate yourself, to expanding your network, to sharing your social capital. This is a huge conversation for years now in Charlotte, this idea of how do you share your social capital? It's a there's a series we do at Creative Mornings called Who Built Me, which is to pause, take a breath, and take a moment to honor someone who gave you a chance, who gave you access or gave you an opportunity that, that maybe you didn't see coming. And in that way, change the course of your life in some way. We all have the power to do that. And that is yet another way that we can help change the world in the way that it needs to be changed. Have the hard conversations. Reassess your innate biases. All of these things are uncomfortable, and they absolutely have to happen. And imagine a world, really imagine a world in which, you know, we have dismantled the machine, the system, and rebuilt it in a way that actually makes sense. And that very likely does mean taking some of the money that's been going to militarizing the police and building up these huge forces and redirecting it to resources in the community that that need those resources. Affordable housing and and opportunity and affordable healthcare and all of it. I mean, we can go on and on. So that's the uncomfortableness of all of this, and we absolutely have to embrace it.
Well, I am...
That's what I meant, but Matt says things a lot better than I think.
He's pretty smart.
He talks for a living, and I don't.
He went to Columbia.
Yeah.
I know that I'm still not doing as much as I should be, but I'm trying. It is exhausting. Most days I just want to lay down and take a nap, and I know that that's a privilege that I get to have. And I'm working hard to change that. As uncomfortable, Matt, as you talk about that, it makes me feel. You know, I'm trying to work my way through it and keep absorbing and educating, because I feel that that's the only way that we can, you know, keep the conversation going and change.
That's the best
the way
thing
that
you can
it's
do.
Been. I can't thank you guys enough. You know how much I love you both. I really appreciate you coming in and sitting down and talking with me on something that is not easy to talk about, especially coming from where we come from personally. So
thanks for talking us into it.
Well, look, this has been You May Have Seen. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you listening.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout out in the next episode.